Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Fulton Lewis, Jr., speaking from the studios of radio station WOL in the nation's capital, Washington, D.C. Mr. Henry J. Kaiser, the quantity production miracle shipbuilder from the Pacific Coast, who is proposing that his yards be converted to the making of immense cargo airplanes instead of building more surface vessels that are vulnerable to Hitler's submarine warfare, told his story to Congress today, and very briefly, the story was that he can do it. Maritime Commission experts and Captain Eddie Rickenbacker, the World War ace who is now head of Eastern Airlines, and technicians from the War Production Board and other government agencies said yesterday that, and said again today for that matter, that it cannot be done. They say there's a grave bottleneck on airplane engines, that most of the equipment that Mr. Kaiser now has in his plant for shipbuilding would be unusable in the making of airplanes. Mr. Kaiser says that about 30% of it would be usable. They said that the technique is entirely different, the problem's entirely strange, and they wagged their heads in skepticism. But Mr. Kaiser replied to that skepticism by saying that he's weary of government officials who say that things can't be done, merely because they never have been done. He said that the Army told him that Grand Coulee Dam could not be built, but he built it. That Bonneville Dam could not be built, but he built it. And he said that resistance to new developments is one of the most serious drags to the full utilization of American industrial ability in the war effort. Mr. Kaiser said he likes to do things that people say are impossible, and he insisted, not to just one congressional committee, but to two of them, that he can do this that people say is impossible. As for the question of engines, where they will come from for these cargo planes if they're built, Mr. Kaiser said the automobile industry. He said the automobile industry already has done endless things that were called impossible, but they are realities today nevertheless. And he gave a sort of tacit implication that if the automotive industry is not able to build enough engines for them, for his planes, he will build the engines himself. That sounds like empty bravado. Well, don't be too sure, because that's exactly what Mr. Kaiser did in the case of the surface vessels that he now is turning out, the Liberty ships. When he had trouble getting engines, he merely built the engines himself. On one of his immense dam construction jobs, when he found that it was too costly to bring cement in from the outside to build that dam, he merely built his own cement plant on the site of the dam and made it there. The members of Congress who heard his testimony today appeared in their later conversations to have been very much impressed by it. The technical experts from the War Production Board still are skeptical. As a matter of fact, they may be right. We still have no specific figures on the record or actual proof as to where the materials or experience or equipment is coming from. That part is still to be unfolded in further hearings by the committee, which will be continued tomorrow. Now, you've heard a great deal lately, and you're hearing more and more every day about the Japanese Zero fighter, the little Japanese pursuit plane which is supposed to be so very superior in actual warfare in the Far East. The reports are that it is very light, very maneuverable, very fast climbing, and for that reason, it has been able to run circles around the American pursuit planes of the same comparable size. There is some truth to that. To begin with, the Zero fighter is not even made of metal. It's made of wood. They've stripped off all armor plate and eliminated the self-sealing gasoline tanks, all to get extreme lightness. They are some better than 2,000 pounds lighter than our ships of the same size, if you can imagine that. And they did get that lightness. They depend almost entirely on the quick climbing ability and the very high maneuverability of that very light plane for the strategic advantage. I learned today, and I have the War Department's permission to tell you these facts so that no military secrets are being given away, that terrific work has been done by the Army Air Corps and by airplane builders since Pearl Harbor, and that already, now, at this moment, a new American pursuit plane is in production, not just on the drawing board, but in production that is a deadly answer to the Zero fighter. The Army High Command has decided to turn those ships out in tremendous quantities, have issued orders to that effect, made contracts, and actual production will be up in very sizable figures within the next couple of months. This new plane will not sacrifice any of the armor protection of the self-sealing gasoline tanks, the things that we have had on our pursuit planes in the past. In fact, the armor plate, I'm told, will be somewhat heavier than The average armor plate has been in the past, but the plane is highly maneuverable. It has a top altitude infinitely higher than the Zero Fighter. The fact is, the engine has a turbo supercharger, and the ship can go to such altitudes that the pilot himself, even with oxygen, is unable to go any higher. This new ship has the most terrific firepower that has ever been mounted on a single-engine pursuit plane in this or any other country. The Zero Fighter, as you may or may not know, has a battery of machine guns, and it carries a 20 millimeter cannon. The cannon that we use on our aircraft is 37 millimeter, almost twice as large, and very rapid firing. The War Department official told me today that any Zero Fighter that comes within range of one of these new American planes that is willing to tangle with it will be turned into mincemeat. The official tests have proven the plane to be everything that was expected of it, and then some. The principle is exactly the opposite of the Japanese principle. They strip all the protective equipment off their planes and leave the pilot exposed in order to get maneuverability. We work on the principle that well-trained pilots are highly valuable. This plane is even heavier than the pursuit planes of the past have been, but they have much more powerful engines, far more powerful engines, that more than make up for the difference. I was informed today that this plane actually and honestly does make 400 miles an hour and better on its own power on a straightaway flat run, which is much faster than the Zero Fighter can do. The rate of climb is not quite so fast as that of the Zero Fighter, very slightly under it, but the chief value of that fast climbing ability, one of the chief values of it, is to allow the Japanese pilot to break away in an engagement and climb up out of range. When that happens, it merely means that you have to wait until next time to get him. This protection of armor plate and self-sealing gasoline tanks makes it virtually impossible for him to get you, particularly when he has nothing heavier than that little light 20-millimeter cannon which cannot penetrate your armor plate. And as a matter of fact, even so, the actual difference in climbing speed is very, very small, if there is any difference. This new American plane is close enough to the climbing speed of the Zero Fighter to be able to stick with it for a long, long time, and actually to probably out-climb it at high altitudes. And those American guns on a Japanese tail only need one split second to land the fatal shot. Now, by tomorrow night, we ought to know what the Supreme Court of the United States thinks about the 8 Nazis who were recently landed on American shores from German submarines, whether they are spies and saboteurs, or merely, as they say, refugees. Their lawyers, as you know, are trying to set aside their secret trial before the military commission, which was appointed by the president, and to have them tried instead in the civil courts, which the president naturally said just couldn't be done. So one of the main arguments of defense is that the men were merely fleeing Germany, even though they carried large quantities of explosives and very large sums of money. Well, the Supreme Court sat through a practice air raid warning today, among other things, and concluded hearing these arguments. It was announced that they will meet again at noon tomorrow, and the presumption is, naturally, that there will be a decision then. Perhaps there may have been a hint of what the court thinks about all this. From one of Justice Robert H. Jackson's remarks today, he observed almost pointedly, in the opinion of a great many people in the courtroom, that any question as to whether the men are invaders or refugees is one that should be decided by the men across the table from the men who testify. Those were his words. And the men across the table from the men who testify happen to be the members of the military commission, the commission whose trial of the men was interrupted by the present Supreme Court proceedings. And incidentally, Attorney General Biddle revealed a very telling point today. He disclosed that the men were wearing German army fatigue clothes when they landed. That was because they thought they could insist upon being treated as mere prisoners of war if they were caught. As you know, of course, prisoners of war are not shot. Only spies and saboteurs are shot. And, well, let's hope to have the answer to all this tomorrow afternoon. Secretary of Interior Ickes, in his role as Federal Oil Coordinator, made official announcement today of a story which I reported to you some 10 days back. You remember I told you about Mr. Wright Gary of the Federal Oil Coordinator's Office, having gone to Houston, Texas, and to Los Angeles, California, And there held with the oil industry meetings in both places looking for sources of butadiene that can be produced quickly so as to get some synthetic rubber into actual production by the end of this year. There have been other similar meetings in other oil refining centers of the country, one as late as day before yesterday in Chicago. And the idea is to concentrate the production of common automobile gasoline in a few refineries, leaving the other refineries unused. Then, taking the equipment from those unused refineries, plus a lot of equipment in obsolete shut-down refineries, rearrange it, remodel it, set up plants that will produce butadiene, and, at the same time, a number of other highly important petroleum war products, and to do so at a very early date. That butadiene, as you know, is the bottleneck ingredient in the high-grade type of synthetic rubber, the Buta S rubber, as it's called. And the plants that will mix the butadiene with the other ingredients and actually make the rubber itself will be ready for operation, many of them, by the end of this year. The other ingredients will be available also at the end of this year. Therefore, in this program, which will get the one last missing ingredient, the butadiene, it becomes possible to get the actual rubber itself into production as of the 1st of next January. I reported to you 10 days ago that Mr. Wright Gary was hoping to get enough of this quick butadiene to produce better than 200,000 tons of rubber per year. Secretary Ickes announced to the regular news channels today that it will be at least 250,000 tons. And that coming into production at the end of this year is the equivalent of twice that much, 500,000 tons, coming into production at the end of the following year. And that's enough at the right time to keep the nation definitely on wheels. One of the most important angles of this program is that it requires practically no critical material such as steel or copper. And while it is making the butadiene, there also is produced toluol, which is the base of explosives, benzol, one of the most important ingredients in high-octane aviation gasoline, isobutylene for the same thing, and half a dozen other items that are tremendously valuable. That's the top of the news as it looks from here, ladies and gentlemen. Until tomorrow evening, good night.
Fridays at this time, Fulton Lewis, Jr. brings you the top of the news from your nation's capital. These broadcasts originate at WOL in Washington. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.